for argument is Huon versus Johnson and Bell. Mr. Huon.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. Minifun pro se. Judge, I'm asking the court to reverse the stay entered by the district court.
Mr. Huon, I just want to ask you a quick question. Could you have asked the state court to stay its decision until your right to sue letter was issued?
That's an excellent question. I couldn't have. I looked at the research. If you look at the cases cited by the defendant, Blount versus Stroud, and the cases that I cited, if you have a state law claim that's inextricably intertwined with the Civil Rights Act, there's no state court jurisdiction.
That's not right, though. The state courts have concurrent jurisdiction over Title VII claims. I mean, I think what Judge Rovner is saying is you file your state court action when you had to respect the statute of limitations. Then you say to the state court, through some mechanism, either stay your proceedings or I'm asking for permission to amend my complaint later once I receive my right to sue letter, and you could get everything before one court.
That's not the law. If you look at the Blount decision and the Geis decision, in Blount, the retaliatory discharge claim was entirely separate. There was a history of retaliatory discharge under Illinois law, and the court allowed that to proceed.
That's a different issue than what we're talking about.
It isn't.
Excuse me. If the facts are different and if something hasn't been raised in a complaint to the EEOC and so forth, one might, in fact, have two different cases, but one might not. And I actually have a different question for you here. Please cite me law that tells me that the state of Illinois in its law thinks that the appellate process has to be completed before a decision is final.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow.
Well, one of the problems in this case is that you have litigation going on in both the state court and the federal court. And the state suit at the trial level finishes in a way adversely to you. And in many states, and I didn't have time to look up Illinois, although I certainly will, that's enough finality for claim and issue preclusion. Perhaps Illinois wants appellate review exhausted. That's an unusual position, but it could be.
To answer your question, in the cited that the defendant's case, Welch versus Johnson, the Seventh Circuit citing Illinois law in Benton versus Smith that says res judicata does not apply if the party against whom it's being asserted didn't have an opportunity to fully and fairly litigate the matter below.
That's a different point than the one I'm asking you. Perhaps it's relevant, but it's not. One has a full and fair opportunity to litigate at the trial level. And if you look at the restatement second of judgments, for example, if you look at other authorities on general preclusion law, there's normally preclusion at the time the trial court is finished, even though a case is on appeal. Now, that may seem counterintuitive and so on, but any state is entitled to make that call for itself. So perhaps Illinois has a different rule. That's all I'm asking you.
I don't know a case to answer that question, but in the facts of this case, I didn't have a full and fair opportunity to litigate the trial level. That's where the judicial estoppel.
Why not?
Well, the short answer is I filed a complaint, and their argument, their position at the trial court level, which appears in the appellate court opinion, which leads to the petition for leave to appeal as a matter of right to the Supreme Court that's pending, is that this case is about an evaluation of an attorney by his supervisors. My complaint in the state court was that I had been a lawyer for 12 years, and I had excellent reviews from the named partner, who's a supervisor. And then all of a sudden, I was reviewed by attorneys who admit that they were not my supervisors, and they gave me negative reviews for work that was never done, and they assigned me work that they would be commensurate for a secretary. That's race discrimination. That was my position. They moved to strike at the state court level saying, oh, all this is irrelevant. All these facts are irrelevant. The only thing that's relevant here is that there was an evaluation of this attorney, and it was done by people who were not his supervisors, and you should look at what's in the evaluation. So the state court, because they moved to strike the other allegations of race, never even considered that.
Well, I mean, look, the state court judge might have thought that that was a badly structured argument might have rejected the argument. Just because somebody argues something doesn't mean the judge just has to accept it. Sounds to me like there's a big overlap between the kinds of claims that you were trying to bring, perhaps unsuccessfully, that's what appeals are for, but the kinds of claims you were trying to bring and the kinds of claims that you are now bringing in the federal court.
But I never even had a chance to even amend my complaint.
Well, that's because you don't think the state court decided your case correctly.
Well, no, I filed a complaint. The state court dismissed the complaint without leave to amend, without a written order.
Right, and you think that was the wrong move.
And the same trial judge was reversed by the first district in a case called Misner versus Clifford on the same issue.
Well,
and the issue was there.
And so you think the state court judge got it wrong. I mean, that's what appeals are for, as you're just now telling me, apparently,
I never had an opportunity to litigate any of these issues in the state court.
So is the rule of law that you're suggesting for us that every time a state court fails to handle a case appropriately, that you can go to federal court and file roughly the same case?
No, because the cases don't overlap. One is a defamation case with a one-year statute of limitation. The other one is a civil rights violation that requires a right to sue letter.
But, you know, Illinois follows a transactional. Anything that's sufficiently related to be within the same constitutional case is encompassed within the scope of claim preclusion.
But the Southern Circuit in Welch versus Smith, which is cited by the defendants, rely on Illinois law in Benton versus Smith that says that claims preclusion and res judicata does not apply if the party never had an opportunity to fully litigate the case below. And going back,
and that's a very standard statement of law. I'm not at all surprised that that was what was said. But the question is, what does that mean? Does that mean you don't have a full and fair opportunity to litigate if the state judge made a mistake? You seem to be saying, yes, a state judge's mistake equals a lack of an opportunity to litigate.
The two claims.
Is that correct? Is that your position?
No, that is not my position.
Then what distinguishes your position? Because every time I've asked you what was wrong with this, you just say the state judge didn't let me amend. The state judge, you know, was listening to their arguments about your race discrimination claims. What was
the
wrong?
The state judge never considered the allegations of race discrimination. If you
And was that a correct decision under Illinois law, in your view? Would you defend the state judge's handling of those things?
No, because that's
okay, so the state judge made a mistake.
No, because that's why there's a petition as a right to learn the Supreme Court, because the state court judge held in the case that the First Amendment applies to this case, even though Johnson and Bell is not a media defendant, when the First District in another case reversed the same judge by holding that the First Amendment does not apply to someone who is
not
a media defendant.
What are you talking about the First Amendment for?
You asked me what I thought about the state judge proceeding. That's the whole point. The state court proceeding has nothing to do with the federal court proceeding. They don't overlap. And Geis,
this is not a First Amendment case. What are you
talking
about?
No, it's not. That's the whole point. That's why the state court case has no bearing on this case. It's a red herring. This case is a race discrimination case. It's not a defamation case. And going
defamation has nothing to do with the First Amendment either. If it's just private parties off there, it's just a tort.
Well, you can tell the state court that, and that's why it's in front of the Illinois Supreme Court. That's why it has nothing to do with this case. Now, going back to what you were saying about that other case, in Geis, the Illinois Supreme Court declined to have the party allow a civil rights case to go forward in state court because the allegation of sex discrimination was inextricably intertwined with the Human Rights Act. So the Illinois Supreme Court has said that if the common law claim has no independent basis and it's intertwined with the Human Rights Act, state courts not have jurisdiction. They said that in Geis, and they said the same thing in Blount. Illinois courts are not courts of general jurisdiction for copyright law. You don't see a copyright law in Illinois courts. You don't see a discrimination case if it's intertwined with the Illinois Human Rights Act. I see my time is up.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Juan. Mr. Baum.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Garrett Baim. I represent the defendants in this matter.
Mr. Baim, aren't the federal claims much broader than those raised in state court in that the federal claims implicate the whole employment relationship between Mr. Juan and the firm rather than just the statements made during his performance evaluations?
I think they are different claims, but all related to the same core facts.
But, you know, the problem is that analysis has never happened. The district court got off on a Colorado River tangent, and I think what really needs to happen is for the district court to sit down with 28 U.S.C. Section 1738, by its side,
yeah,
analyze the case, see what preclusive effect Illinois would give to what happened in the state courts, see how that maps onto the claim that is pending before the trial court, and decide accordingly. None of that has happened, as far as I can tell, so far. And that's a mistake.
Mr. Bohm, I'm going to really just get to the bottom line with you. Abstention pursuant to Colorado River is justified only in the rarest of cases. The district court here has the most abbreviated analysis, looks at 3 of the 10 issues that a district court absolutely has to look at to meet the rather high standard for abstention, and I hate to tell you, you all really led Judge Manning astray here.
How did we lead Judge Manning astray?
With your arguments about Colorado River abstention, because this is not the rare case in which Colorado River abstention is warranted. Period. End of discussion for me, at any rate.
Well, I may not convince you otherwise. I think, looking at Colorado River, there's a two-step process. First, analyzing whether or not there are parallel actions. I think there are parallel actions because they are the same parties that were before similar parties between the state court and the federal action.
Parallel actions happen all the time,
yes,
across the United States, every day, in the state courts and the federal courts. And the usual way that is resolved is essentially a first-to-finish rule. The first case that finishes is the one that is then going to have preclusive effect under the law of judgments against the others. If your position were correct, we would see endless numbers of Colorado River stays being granted. And we don't, because the Supreme Court has told us, in language as clear as it can come up with, not to do that. Colorado River, if you think of the facts of Colorado River itself, it was a very unusual case where there was a complex water allocation scheme. There's almost no way to manage it through the ordinary law of judgments. So I think that the idea that these cases overlap may be true, but it's not helpful. It doesn't really get us far enough.
To your point as to the case that finishes first, I believe here that the defamation case before the state court had been dismissed.
Right, and that's why I ask the question whether Illinois, actually contrary to what I believe, but I'm certainly happy to read any case, follows a rule of finality that requires exhaustion all the way up to the Supreme Court, or whether Illinois, like most states, says that something is final enough for preclusion once the trial court is finished. I just haven't looked into that, but maybe you have.
That it does require for there to be appellate finality, for there to be complete finality for the case. And I think
all the way up to denial of petition the Supreme Court?
I believe the appellate process has to be exhausted.
Okay, so in that case, nothing is finished.
It's not final. No.
So you just have to wait.
It was affirmed by the appellate court, and the plaintiff petitioned the Supreme Court for appeal.
And that has not yet been resolved.
It is pending.
Okay. So if it finishes first, then there will be a 1738 question for the district court.
True. And I believe what happened here is that Judge Manning looked at the circumstances, saw that there was a certain likelihood that there may be res judicata claim preclusion should the state court denial be affirmed and become final, such that it made sense from a judicial resources and the resources of the parties to stay that matter.
But that's not a Colorado River stay. That might be a case management stay, for example, but it's certainly not Colorado River. I mean, and if you want us to have appellate jurisdiction over every single decision of a district court to postpone a ruling, that's a really frightening prospect to me.
Look, it may be true that on remand, Mr. Hone eventually will face the possibility that his federal suit is barred by res judicata if the state complaint, you know, it is upheld on on. But I know, it at first blush, it seems inefficient to allow both cases to proceed.
Sure does.
But the Colorado River Doctrine focuses on a federal court's obligation to exercise its jurisdiction.
Don't accept that.
Accept it.
Don't accept the cliche about the virtual and flagging
obligation.
Oh, for shame.
He's getting back at me for the other case, for those of you who were here. But I love him.
Just a cliche.
But I love him.
Mr. Huon suggested in his
argument your ground.
That he did not have the opportunity, the full and fair opportunity to litigate all claims before the state court. And that is simply false. The first question you asked Judge Roedner is whether or not he had the opportunity to ask the state court for a stay. Indeed, he did. He didn't ask for that. He didn't ask for the opportunity to amend his complaint. Therefore, the dismissal stood, it became final, and then he appealed it.
Look, what really bothers me is that his federal case essentially has been, you know, languishing for almost 2 years on the assumption that the Illinois Circuit Court's judgment will someday be affirmed. But that outcome is far from certain. I just feel that the Colorado River Doctrine isn't intended to give defendants the upper hand by stalling the federal case to wait for a favorable final judgment in the state proceeding that then can be used to bar a plaintiff's claims in federal court. And, you know, that's what happened here.
Well, I would suggest otherwise, based upon the facts being so intertwined as to what led to the
Why aren't you just arguing that he split his claim? Isn't that what it's about? He has one claim. He split it. That's forbidden. You can't take your claim, split it up into 10 ways, and bring 10 different lawsuits, right? Whether you do it in one court system or 10 court systems. That, to me, is the case.
Well,
the
case, and I would add that he had the opportunity to ask the EEOC to accelerate his right to sue letter. He didn't do that. He simply waited for that EEOC letter to be issued. Looking at Brostowski and Prochowski, they specifically state that it's an arrest judicata analysis, but they have a plaintiff has the opportunity and should pursue the opportunity to ask the EEOC to accelerate his claim, his right to sue letter, when it's appropriate. He didn't do that. That resulted in the split claims.
Is that it? Okay,
thanks.
So Mr.
You can pretty much see where we're going here, can't you?
Where you're going. Not where I'm going. So, Mr. Huon, what do you have? Tell me now, why did you decide to split your claim between two courts? What's that about?
It's a good question. The Seventh Circuit and Stats said
why did you decide to split your claim? Tell me, please, and don't tell me about cases. Tell me why you made a litigating decision to split your claim between a state court and a federal court, and why did you do that?
Because I filed a defamation lawsuit on the day that the one-year statute of limitation expired.
Fine.
And I did not receive a right to sue letter.
Yes, of course. So you should have said to the state court, look, I'd like you to stay the case, or allow me to amend with, you know, relation back when I get my right to sue letter, and then you could have all your claims in state court, right? In one case. What's wrong with that?
The short answer is I didn't know that. That's the short answer.
Oh, yeah, you didn't know better. So now we have two suits, we have an appeal, because you don't know better, right?
And why are we supposed
to bail you out? You're a lawyer. You're supposed to get it right.
I'm not asking to bail me out. I'm saying I didn't
know
that.
Yes, you are, What are you doing up here?
I'm saying that nobody would have known.
Why did you split your claim? And you say you split your claim because you didn't know better, even though you're a lawyer. You're supposed to know better.
The only reason why we know that now is because this case is up on appeal. They didn't
know that. No, it should have been obvious to you. There are cases by Judge Wood. There are other cases which tell you what to do in your situation, which is you ask the state court for a stay or for other or anything else to make sure that when you get your right to sue letter, you'll be able to join it with your state suit. So you'll have your defamation suit with its short, your defamation claim is short statute of limitation. Then you have your federal, and then you have everything in one court, and plaintiffs like to be in state court. And there you are. So why didn't you do that? Spare us this.
I think it's real easy to look back retrospectively.
No, because it's in Judge Wood's opinion that's how, the Hearn opinion. That's how you're supposed to proceed. She told you.
There's a case in stats where it says that you can split
she told you how to proceed. You're not supposed to split your claim. We don't want to hear the same case divided in a bunch of different legal systems.
I just want to add one of the things, Judge. If you look at the district court opinion, she didn't really look at the facts of the case. The district court said that the state court was in advanced proceedings. There's not even any discovery in the state court. She didn't even look at the facts of the case. If she looked at the facts of the case, she would have known.
Well, why aren't you doing something? Why aren't you doing anything in the state court proceeding?
I filed a petition for leave to Illinois Supreme Court. That's my point. I didn't know about the stay. I didn't know about this accelerated docket that they brought up on the reply brief. I've been a lawyer for 12 years.
Why don't you hire a lawyer who knows about this stuff? What kind of practice do you have?
Injury, state law injury.
You have no business representing yourself in this case.
How is a pro se person supposed to get in the federal court?
You're supposed to hire a lawyer.
You
go to a lawyer. You go to a lawyer, and if you don't have any money, you say to him, will you handle it on a contingent basis? And he makes a judgment whether your case has any merit. And if it does, he handles it on a contingent basis.
Please go out of court. I just want to add one last thing.
The notion of a lawyer being pro se.
I think maybe we should just take your brief. We have heard what you've had to say.
All right, thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you to both counsel. Next case.